Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a woman straight back from her girls' trip to Spain, Janie Skull.
I don't even get the reference. What is that?
Janie, about Michelle. Oh. Michelle, come on. This has been all over the news because it's the doldrums of summer. There's nothing else to report on. Everybody's making a big deal out of it.
There may not be nothing to report on, but there's plenty going on. And I will admit, I have been lax on my, you know, keeping up with the news recently.
Janie, we're here to talk about the news.
Hey, I know. Well, I would keep up on the education news, of course, Okay. Obviously.
Yes. But. Michelle Obama went on this trip with some friends to Spain, and there's been a lot of talk about her being, you know, the Marie Antoinette. Blah 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 blah. Whatever. Anyways, I you know, I try to get in that pop culture reference. Every
oh, I
time.
Know. And normally I'm right there. You know, the Jersey Shores. I'm right there with that one.
Gotcha.
All Michelle right. Obama. It's over my head.
I see. I did. I shot too high on that one. I shot too high. Janie, you know, it is the heart of summer here. Hot week in Washington D.C. Yeah. And the city does feel empty. And yet, it's also bizarre. The House rushes back in to pass this jobs bill. There's still news churning out. There doesn't seem to be a break anymore in the education policy world.
Not in education, no.
No. I mean, it's just, but keeps going all summer long, and now it's almost back to school time. What is going on? It's crazy. But thank goodness you've got us here at the Education Gadfly Show to make sense of it all. Lots to cover today. Let's go ahead and get started. Intern Kyle, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Okay, question one. Speaker Pelosi brought the House of Representatives back for a special session this week to pass the big jobs program, including $10 billion for education. Both the Democratic and Republican parties seem to think they can use EduJobs to their advantage. How are the politics likely to play out?
Well, you know, this is a case of the parties playing to their bases, for sure. I mean, you know, this is a big boon to the teachers' unions, who fought very hard for this, spent a lot of money lobbying, and also, you know, got their grassroots machines up and going, which, you know, credit to them. That's how democracy works. Sent tons of letters, emails, and so very happy to get this through. And I think the Democrats are hoping that turns into more strong support for Democrats in the fall election. A lot of concerns on the Democratic side. The core of the base just wasn't that excited.
Now well, yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that rather than it being used to their advantage, I almost feel like it's being used to the disadvantage of both sides, because there are the Democrats that don't think, actually, that we should be, you know, pushing this bill forward. And in many ways, there are people, you know, while the debate is not necessarily centered around actual education and, you know, what's best for students, there's always that component. Mm-hmm. And people saying, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't be throwing all this money back at schools, because maybe it would actually help to, you know, right. have them tighten their budgets and things like that.
Right. But in terms of how this is going to play in the election, I mean, you can see a Democratic candidate saying, hey, you know, my opponent opposed this bill and I'm here to protect the teachers. And that gets mm-hmm. their base excited and going out to knock on doors. And on the other hand, the Republicans are really going to hit hard on this note of the Democrats spending like drunken sailors and not having discipline mm-hmm. around the budget. And the question for Republicans is, can they make this argument that this is more reckless spending without sounding anti-teacher? Because this is always, and this is why, is that politics are always tricky, and you've had I think the Democrats, you know, are almost hoping to pull the Republicans into that trap.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely last minute, you know, it seems kind of surprised, we need to run back to Congress to pass mm-hmm. this bill, and so I think that's definitely a part of it that Republicans can play upon, that mm-hmm. this is not something that was really well thought out, that, mm-hmm. you know, went through the normal process, so it does seem a little spur of the moment.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see how much this plays once we see the campaign ads and stuff like that. Okay, question number two, Kyle.
The Department of Education announced the winners of its Investing in Innovation competition last week. What to make of the outcome?
I mean, I thought it was great. I think there are a lot of really high-quality organizations that got money. I think there are some that, you know, maybe not be, might not be as good, and it's definitely questionable about how they're going to spend money, how they're going to keep up the flow of money in the future, and how that's going to affect actual budgets within the organizations themselves. But in general, I mean, I think there were some good selections.
Wrong!
I'm just playing your devil's advocate.
All right. Look, I mean, I'm torn about this. I mean, mm-hmm. I think this is certainly a better activity than much of what the federal government does in education. You're right that some fantastic groups got some big bucks, like KIPP, to help it grow much faster than it could have otherwise. Teach for America, New Teacher Project, School of One. I mean, a lot of mm-hmm. Really interesting education reform programs out there. That's great. And I also have a lot of respect for the folks putting this together at my old stomping grounds of the Office of Innovation and Improvement. However, it is fair to say that some of these things, it's a little questionable about just how innovative they are.
Certainly.
Reading Recovery getting $50 million is a program that's been around forever and, in my view, is quite questionable. Uses a lot of whole language-y kinds of techniques. I think the evidence is quite mixed on this. And then Success for All, which I do think is, you know, generally regarded as a successful program and a quality program, but again, has been around a long time. A friend of mine said, look, probably every low-performing school in this country has given Success for All a shot at one point. It's a hard program to implement. It's expensive. It takes an enormous amount of sort of training and ongoing attention, and there's just a lot of places that haven't had the capacity to pull it off. So, you know, I guess you take the good, you take the bad, but it is a little bit of a concern that we take sort of the popular ideas circa 2010 and freeze them in stone and give them a huge advantage over some of the other ideas out there.
Well, I think that's
how it plays out.
Part of that is helped by the fact that it is, well, you know, it's supposed to be a one-time grant, so it's not like these programs will be funded indefinitely in the future and will just, you know, continue to grow and grow and grow.
Okay. Topic number three, Kyle.
Atlanta Public Schools is engulfed in a cheating scandal with evidence of widespread cheating on the state test in at least a dozen schools. What does this mean for standards-based reform?
Well, you know, so, Janie, this is nothing new in that, I mean, we see this happening all over the country, mm-hmm. periodically, news of cheating scandals. I mean, one good news is that we're getting better at detecting these, using various techniques to look for evidence that you know, in this case, test scores got erased and remarked, and that kind of opens up some questions that maybe a teacher did that after the fact. But I don't know. I mean, is this is testing and testing-based accountability, is it just hopeless? There's always going to be this kind of cheating?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there will, as long as the people who are administering the test have a stake in the results of the test, I think, yes, it would be naive to say that cheating would not exist. But I think what's really interesting here is that, you know, this big cheating scandal happened, and so, you know, it completely devalued all of the test scores. People were saying that the Atlanta students didn't improve, even though the NAEP scores showed that they did. And what I think is interesting is that you have these two parallel accountability systems, but the only one that the parents and the media really care about is the state, because that's the only one that actually means anything.
Right.
So until the state is an actual, you know, the state test carries a lot of weight and is comparable to other states and is comparable to the NAEP, you know, I think standards are kind of meaningless.
Yeah. And, you know, the good news is with the Common Core standards coming online and the common assessments too, we hope that the next generation of tests will be better, will be more trustworthy, and we'll figure out a way to actually give these tests so that they're not open to this kind of cheating. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, that the defense in Atlanta is say, hey, look at our NAEP scores. We've made big gains in NAEP, and that's absolutely true. However, those gains weren't anywhere near as big as the gains they had in the state test.
No,
similar
just
to
like to New York.
Just
yeah.
like New York City, right? Joel Klein is running around saying, hey, okay, maybe the state test got easier over time. Maybe the cut scores weren't where they needed to be, but we've made progress on NAEP. Well, in both cases, they've made modest progress on NAEP, and they were showing tremendous gains on the state test and crowing about them, and that's the problem that we've got where we are today. Okay, nicely played, Janie. All the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for the bronzed and tanned edition of everyone's favorite Amber's Research Minute. You know, Amber, I've always respected how efficient you are. I mean, here on the show, you cram more into your 1 minute than Rick and I do in the rest of the entire show. And
well,
also, your work, working here at Fordham, you're incredibly efficient. And here you are, you went away for 4 days, and you have the tan of somebody that's been away for weeks.
I have a lot of two were in Ohio.
Melatonin in my skin, apparently. My dad is actually Italian, so I've got a little bit. Even though I look like pasty white, you know, most of the time. So.
Well, you don't now.
Anyway. Well, thank you. Nice to have a little time away from the office, as we all know. So,
what are we talking
Feeling
about this
good
week,
today.
Amber?
We are talking about low-income kids and reading. So we have heard again and again how low-income kids, especially, lose learning ground in the summer when they're out of school, while the middle and upper income kids continue to gain, or at least don't lose academic ground over the summer months. So this is a longitudinal experimental study conducted by researchers from the University of Tennessee. It attempts to address that summer learning loss, I'm having a hard time today, by supplying low-income students from 17 high-poverty schools in Florida with a dozen self-selected selected books each summer. Okay, so these kids get to go in and pick basically a dozen books they want to read. They match them with a control group who are drawn from those same schools, and they were matched on the variables that we all care about, mainly demographics and reading scores, previous reading scores. So the control kids got no books. At the end of 3 years and three summers, not surprisingly, the treatment kids outperformed the control group on Florida's state reading test, and the reading gains for the poorest kids were even larger. So, interestingly, the books the kids chose had to do most often with pop culture. They weren't curriculum-relevant books. I believe Britney Spears' biography, I believe, was the most popular book.
I would have thought it was Twilight, but that is impressive.
The text complexity of the books was not analyzed. Interestingly, the analyst estimated that supplying low-income kids with summer reading books cost about $50 a child, and the overall impact of the intervention is similar to the impact of a child attending summer school, as analyzed in numerous other studies. So in other words, you get the intervention is cheaper and you get the same bang for your buck as other more expensive reading interventions. So it was interesting.
Boom.
And basically, you know, what I thought was interesting, we're just talking low-income kids here. So we didn't look at whether they catch up, you know, to their middle-income peers. But I think what I took away from it, I mean, they're reading a bunch of pop culture books, but I think for low-income kids, it's sort of like something is better than nothing, you know?
Yeah, it's almost more interesting that they were self-selected books and they weren't necessarily, you know, rigorous academic books, and yet it still made a difference.
Yeah, it's summer, I mean, right? So that's, I think it's fascinating. I mean, it certainly seems to be make a good case for libraries, too.
Yes.
I mean, I would think that the country's librarians would be very happy about this as they're trying, you know, fighting off budget cuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think with Common Core, there's a big sort of brouhaha about making sure kids read books that are sophisticated and rigorous are going to keep kind of pushing the envelope. But here, it's sort of, you know, this drop everything and read. This has been this initiative that's been around forever, where kids just, you know, pick anything to read. And a lot of people sort of say, eh, is that really helping them? Is it really doing anything? But for low-income kids, it seems to do something.
Well, I feel... fine about it if it's outside of school day.
Right.
I mean, I get it if you say, okay, now it's within the school day and it's a question of do you drop everything and read versus some other intervention within the school.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is, I mean, $50 a kid, that sounds like a no-brainer. And again, when the public, you know, people are making decisions right now about budget cuts and you see some of these libraries getting slashed to protect the schools, well, you know, maybe in this case, protecting the libraries would make more sense.
Fill it up with Britney Spears biographies.
Mm-hmm. I want to know how they kept the original cohort of kids from reading books. How did you get to be that kid?
Yeah, right.
I'm sure you're real happy when the study's finished.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the song that goes with this, Amber?
The song, since we're talking about summertime reading, we have Summertime by Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Old school.
I don't know why Will Smith doesn't sing anymore. That was good stuff.
It wasn't that long ago that he did an album, was it? Didn't he, for one of his movies?
It was probably within the last decade. Yeah, certainly within the last decade.
I mean, so what was that? Summertime, do you think that was cut in what, mid-90s? Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
Whew, good stuff. When you were in middle school?
Possibly.
Younger, elementary school.
Hey, that's something that wasn't listening to Will Smith.
Yes.
I was a very hip middle schooler.
Of course. Absolutely. I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it, Janie. All right. Well, you know who's hip? It's Stafford. He's going to rate that reform. I have to say, Stafford, I always think that you're more lip than hip.
I don't know if that's a compliment.
You know, I'm like, pretty sure that's not a compliment. I'm pretty sure it's an insult. Mike!
No. I'm just saying, you know,
you talk a big game and you don't walk a big walk. That's what you're saying.
I didn't really think it through very much, but no, I'm just saying, you know how to throw a good jab with your rhetorical words.
You're a good jabber.
Yes. Okay. What are we rating
and
today?
On that note. Well, now that Mike has given me my performance review on the podcast that I am all lip and no, not hip. What would you do to get out of a performance review? Would you call in sick, bribe your boss, throw yourself down the stairs? Eileen Feldman would. This first-year teacher at a New York City high school was scheduled for a classroom observation. Petrified she'd receive a low rating, having already gotten low marks on a prior evaluation, she staged her own fall down the school stairs just as a coworker was entering the staircase and in full sight of a school surveillance camera. Unfortunately, that same camera proved her downfall, since the coincidence of falling and having her review on the same day raised red flags, and the tape was sent to the district for review. It probably didn't help either that she claimed 4 days of unemployment compensation for her, quote, work-related injury. Thankfully, this story has a happy ending. Feldman was caught and barred from ever working in a New York City school again. So I'd love to rate this decision, you know, to purposefully fall down the stairs, but this is Rate That Reform, so I will stay on task here. From a policy perspective, this story surely had a positive outcome, since Feldman got her just desserts. But with two caveats. One, Feldman was a novice teacher and therefore untenured. Would we have had the same positive outcome had she been a tenured veteran?
The positive outcome of her falling down the stairs.
The positive outcome of her being removed from the New York City public school systems. Now note that I said removed from New York City public school systems because in fact Feldman resigned and was not fired and was only resigned actually in 2009 because this incident happened back in December 2008. So even though she's finally out of the system, it took a year and a half for this story to come to light. So I gave the story a B+. Because the system does not work the way we want it. It takes too long to get the Feldmans out of our system, out of our classrooms.
Okay, so what I want to know is when they sent the tape to the district, I mean, which office do they send that tape to? I mean, is there somebody whose job it is to...
I think they
occasionally when somebody throws themselves down a stairwell that they're supposed to analyze it
because for she claimed comp for the 4 days she took off. I think they sent it to the Inspector General's office because that was turned into illegal. So that was really her biggest blunder.
She got greedy.
Come in on crutches. Yeah, exactly. Had she not gotten
powered
greedy.
Through her injuries.
However, if anyone is interested, you should seriously just Google Eileen Feldman and you can actually watch her falling down the stairs. She comes down about halfway down the staircase and then she sort of crouches down. She looks at the camera and you can sort of like hear her listening for someone coming into the staircase. And then she goes head over heels and like literally fall. And it's only like 3 or 4 stairs, but she does it so that her like limbs are akimbo, just sort of like down the stairs. It's quite beautiful. She really did outdo herself. And then she sort of like grabs her leg and does this dramatic sort of like as if she's in serious pain.
It sounds like the World Cup. I mean, this is
very dramatic.
Surprising. Wow. All right. Good one, Stafford. Thanks for finding that. Hey, I'll be off next week, but the Education Gadfly Show will still be here.
Yes, indeed.
Until that time.
I'm Janie Skull.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show, always available at edexcellence.net. Signing off.